All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line with us, Whitting Partners. He's also the host of the Energy Detox podcast. How are you doing today? How are you doing today?
I am doing great, Jason. How about yourself?
Well, it's like minus 10 degrees here. Feels like minus 30. And so my breath apparently is a little bit shortened due to the cold weather and the congestion that's coming in. And how's the weather in the Marcellus? You're out south of Pittsburgh, is that right?
I'm just a bit north of Pittsburgh, but more importantly, I am about an hour and a half south of Punxsutawney. So when it comes to weather, of course, we are in the midst of our six additional, or I don't know if it's additional or the standard amount, unreduced 6 weeks more of winter, thanks to Punxsutawney Phil the other day.
Have you ever gone to a Groundhog's Day festival?
I have not, Jason.
That is on my honest to God bucket list. And I just realized it now, because back when we were in high school, we would actually throw a keg party on Groundhog's Day just because it's Groundhog's Day. We thought it was an appropriate reason to have a big party and things like that. And what a unusual holiday that 50,000 people show up for and leave a minute later after this thing is done. It's just what a fabulous event. And anyway, so I don't know if you've got any comments on that or not, but.
Oh, hey, Jason, I'm happy to comment on anything. And as always, you know, all roads lead back to energy. That's, you know, energy and leadership. That's sort of my shtick there. But no, we can leave Phil out of this unless you feel really inclined to bring him into the conversation today.
Well, I would be curious to know how many leaders take their stock advice from Punxsutawney Phil. Like, if he's going to, you know, have more winter, do you buy more stock in the energy industry because people need to heat their homes a little bit more? And so anyway, that's another for another day. But Joe, I wanted to talk some conflict management today for a variety of reasons. We are entering into that kind of springtime cracking of the ice that's going to happen here over the next month, the spring thaw. I know we're at the beginning of February, the Super Bowl is this weekend, and so people are again in the heart of the cold, but right around the corner is that spring thaw, and over the next month is when that cabin fever starts to kick in a little bit and people start getting that itch for spring fever. The vacation isn't quite there, so they start dreaming a little bit. When you become a little bit cooped up, you might become a little bit more short with your words. You might not, you know, your mind is elsewhere, Joe. So conflict management here is, first of all, have you noticed a certain season? Is there more conflict in the winter time than there is in other areas? Because I would think if you're housed up and, you know, boy, you're stuck with somebody, your cellmate, you might start to argue a little bit more and more, Joe. You know, it's not all wedding bliss. But is there a season for conflict management in your world?
Good question. I think it's logical. I don't know that I can think of any anecdotes off the top of my head. I think, you know, moving away from weather, I certainly see seasons within organizations that I work with. Certainly, you know, there's a, you know, talk about Groundhog Day, right? It feels like, you know, it's the same patterns over and over again. So I think there's certain times of the year where people are more on edge than others, but tying that into the actual seasons and weather and being cooped up, I don't want to just come out and say that I've noticed that, but I will definitely be on guard going forward. Thanks to your question, Jason.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how to handle some conflict management on some different levels, because there are different, you know, levels of conflict management, different results, different escalations, de-escalations as well. And, you know, some simple ones that when we're coming in, you know, let's take a look at what's happened over the last several months. A new president has been elected. A brand new industry has been born, if you will. We're looking at new energy secretary, new interior secretary. There's so much change that's happening that anytime you have this much change, there's always going to be conflict. Change brings conflict, right? And conflict isn't necessarily a bad thing, because when you have warm air and cold air and they meet, they have a conflict and produce wind. So Not to get all Buddhist on you, but I just wanted to set the table a little bit that when we're talking about conflict, we're not talking about necessarily angry individuals. We're talking about just a difference of opinion, all the way to angry individuals, Joe. But on the basic level, how can somebody get a little bit proactive and when they start seeing some signs of conflict because, hey, we got a new interior secretary and a new energy secretary, and now the regulations are going to change. Let's talk there a little bit, how to deal with just some basic conflict in the workplace.
Sure. And obviously, like you said, I mean, this is a big topic. We can start broad. I would say, on, most of my dealings when it comes to conflict, it tends to be one-on-one. So it tends to be one-on-one coaching with people who say, hey, I have this specific conflict or specific individual, or I just left this meeting, or I'm about to head into this meeting that's going to be, likely have some conflict. And so typically it is, very much fit for purpose. In terms of the general themes, though, to kick off this conversation or answer to your question, Jason, by and large, the best thing that people could do is articulate what the end goal is for all parties. What is the end goal? What is the ultimate objective? What is success defined as? Because I'm saying 9 times out of 10, but a majority of the time, for sure, the people who are going to find themselves in conflict actually have the same goal in mind. What they're typically arguing over is how to get there. Even when it comes to things like, say, energy, you mentioned, new energy secretary and secretary of the interior, things like that. By and large, the high level goal, or at least, some of the sub goals are going to be the same regardless of where you're at, right? Bettering human lives. If you take a page from Chris Wright, that's pretty sure that that's something that everybody can get on board with. Now, how you get there, obviously, sure, there's a lot of different paths, but that's typically, Jason, where I advise people to go, which is, all right, again, not to oversimplify and talk about finding common ground, but at least be able to articulate what the person on the other side of the argument is after. If you understand that and you can repeat that back to that person, again, it's a great way to de-escalate and now actually start talking through some of those, like you said, healthy conflicts when it comes to, okay, what are the best paths to get there? Let's not argue over intermediate things that really don't matter. Let's argue over some concrete ways to get to our shared goal. So I'll stop there, Jason, but that's typically the first step that I take people through when it comes to, again, not avoiding, definitely not avoiding conflict, but taking full advantage of it, as you alluded to a minute ago.
Have you pretty much been on social media your whole life, Joe?
No, and I mean, I guess it depends on how you define social media, but my Facebook came to be, I think I was a senior in college,
Okay.
so I mean, I guess before that, yeah, it wouldn't have been social media. I mean, you think about the evolution of the America Online and Instant Messenger and things like that, but I guess pure social media, I never did the MySpace thing. I guess that predate Facebook.
It did, yeah, and I was on MySpace originally, and in fact, I wrote an article for a business publication about the power of MySpace, and because it was the leader, MySpace had figured out a way to monetize early on with bands and some other entertainers, and so it worked really well, but it became very janky and just really. Oh boy, I can't even think of the derogatory right now. It just turned into something that nobody wanted to be a part of anymore because there was all kinds of things that were banned by the FCC and most families on there. But I bring up social media because I do wonder how much social media has changed conflict management. So I asked you about, your background a little bit because, I was in my late 20s, mid 20s, I guess, probably when I maybe early 30s when I got on social media. And I was an early adapter, obviously, because I was in the media. And so I see a lot of the pros and cons. And the one thing that the internet does is it allows people to be anonymous and it allows people to sling verbal daggers and really not have any accountability. And so I wonder how that plays into conflict management because what I've found is there a younger generation really has a hard time with basic conflict management. I mean, we're talking real basic conflict management. And I do wonder if social media has played into that, being able to be anonymous and like I say, sling your verbal daggers and that kind of thing. Talk to me a little bit about just your experience, social media, conflict management. Is it better or worse?
I think when it comes to social, well, I mean, this probably applies to all conflict, but with social media, it's a good opportunity to ask yourself, so what? So with social media, like you said, it's easy to sling daggers. It's all over. It's overwhelming. It's easy to, there's a million different things that, could come to your direction that you can be distracted by, that could get you fired up or, filled with conflict, if you will. But it's also a good opportunity. And again, I say this as somebody who coaches individuals. And much of my coaching is, well, so what? Who cares what they said? How does it matter? What difference does it make? And help people understand that, again, a lot of the stuff that might be thrown in their direction really doesn't matter. Some things do, some things need to be addressed. Some things, yeah, maybe, should get your blood boiling a little bit. But I think what social media has done is, again, it's distraction after distraction. It's opportunity after opportunity to get fired up over things that by and large can lead you astray and probably don't matter, Jason. So I don't think social media is, I don't think it's much different from, the individual daggers that people have been launching back and forth at each other, figuratively or literally for, all of human history. I think it's just a matter of how many there are and how it becomes, I think, more difficult sometimes to let certain ones go and ignore certain ones, if that makes sense.
It does. And to me, I've always thought of, social media has really allowed talking behind someone's back more public because you can be anonymous and talk behind someone's back publicly. And so it gives like somebody the courage to exude this negative emotion that they have, but they seem to not have the follow through or the depth of thinking on where what happens when it lands, and have I really thought this through a little bit? And let's talk about that, because I do think we live in such a triggered world now, and a lot of it is because of social media, but that is brought into the workplace. And I'll tell you what, pronouns, perfect example. Just the fact that I bring up pronouns, I'm triggering people right now. Oh, which way is he going to go? He probably hates it. He probably likes it. Which they automatically are making up their minds as a trigger as soon as I mention something, a word or a phrase or something along those lines. But when I take a look at, just a simple thing like pronouns, that is triggering now. So when we have a workplace where people can be triggered and they have the backing to get upset, it has changed conflict management as far as my guess the strategy on how managers tackle this. What advice do you give people? Because man, the more I'm talking about this, first time here realizing it, I couldn't even imagine being a manager dealing with some of this issues with the triggering and the pronouns and mental health day. I'm on my way to work and I drove by a Dairy Queen and I got depressed because I used to work there in high school and I started thinking about the good old days. And so now I got a mental health day and that's okay. I mean, I'm just sorry, I'm just processing here in the moment. But talk to me a little bit about the evolution of that, because the triggering and just some of these things has got to make it difficult as can be for a basic manager now.
Yeah, well, and I guess maybe somewhat ironically, use the word trigger multiple times. The word trigger can, again, ironically, or maybe it's not ironic, maybe it just makes sense. The word trigger can be a trigger, right? In this day and age, say, what do you mean triggered by? And keeping, again, my focus is oil and gas. I work in oil and gas. So clearly you have a lot of hardened individuals, whether they're in leadership positions or not, who pride themselves on not being triggered, right? I got thick skin. I'm going to be able to plow through no matter what. And I don't care if the other person has triggers. I'm going to say what I want to say anyway. I mean, that's almost the default, if not stereotype, but it's stereotype for a reason. So what I'll say to that, Jason, is again, coming into organizations as a coach, it's first and foremost helping people understand that, you know what? It pays to understand what other people's triggers are. You don't have to agree with them or not, but take a moment proactively to try to figure out, what is going to cause somebody even just internally to, start forming an opinion before you even, get the rest of the words out of your mouth or, cast you aside or, demonstrate bias, whatever. So getting people to understand that, having a deep and a decent understanding of other people's triggers, you could be used to your advantage. And again, case in point, when I go into organizations and I have 360 degree conversations, so again, lots of conversations with lots of different people, often to get a sense of, typically I'm focused on, one or a handful of individuals. Those conversations often reveal certain triggers. And helping the individual who, may unwittingly be triggered by certain things understand his or her triggers, and then conversely helping, his or her audience understand what their triggers are, that's not a bad thing, right? So I think that's how I view this, Jason, which is, look, triggers are neither good nor bad. They're reactions, right? And simply ignoring them or saying that, oh, you're weak if, what did you say? You drive through a Dairy Queen and, you have it triggers some sort of memory. Well, I don't know if you made that up or not, but I mean, I'm looking at that as saying, hey, that's data. That's information for me. How could I use that to, help move Jason along or to make sure that we don't get sidetracked? And so it's just a reframing of this whole triggers thing that, if done properly, not in some transactional way, but if done properly, can be a huge advantage to help people, act and manage and lead more consciously.
I have no idea how I came up with that example. It was in the moment. Like I say, I was processing it in real time. And now that I think about it, I don't think I've ever had a bad experience at a Dairy Queen. The worst experience I've ever had at a Dairy Queen is when I got the sour, it was at the Nerds Blizzard. I tried the Nerds Blizzard. And there must have been 57 different types of sugar, and that's all the thing was. And I could literally see through time. I took one bite, and that was it. That was the all I could take for that Nerds Blizzard. Oh my word, that was just so much sugar. But other than that, yeah, I don't know how I came up with that, Joe. I just know that it's happened where I've had managers and owners of businesses call me to just talk through their excuse my language, their pissed offness because an employee decided on the way to work that they're going to have a mental health day. They didn't feel like working, and the employee or the owner of the company felt like they couldn't do anything. They felt like, well, this is the world we live in now, that if I decide I want to challenge this, I might get sued for a hostile work environment. And if I allow it, well, then I got to pick up the slack because they gave me about a half hour notice. And it's just a different world that we're living in now. And in the oil and gas industry, you don't find that very much, but you do find it in some of the other industries, Joe.
Yeah, and let me say one potential antidote to, the manager who has to deal with unexpected surprises or whatever, whatever the scenario is. My favorite tool, and anybody that works with me knows, I'm not bashful about the fact that my favorite tool, Jason, is responding to those scenarios by saying, well, what I like about that, and not just to, put a silver lining on things or be overly positive or unrealistic, but to genuinely say, hey, what I like about the fact that this person called in. They recognize that they need a day off. Again, we'll assume positive intent there. Well, what I like about that is it gives me an opportunity to go do X, Y, and Z. Or again, you can go any number of directions. But again, you want to talk about managing through conflict. You want to talk about managing through triggers. The individual, whether they're in a leadership position or not, who is able to genuinely say, hey, what I like about this, this is an opportunity to grow, and here's why. They could still be, as you said, pissed off. But is their first step, is their first instinct to grow from it, to build on it? And again, not to sound too fluffy here, but the leaders who are able to do that, Jason, and do that habitually, well, not surprisingly, they're the ones who are able to lead their teams through stressful situations and the various seasons, if you will, of corporate America.
Well, I wanted to start with the most important employees, which is the ground floor level. The people who work in the mail room are generally your most important employees because the CEO will tell you that, a good CEO will tell you that right away, that my employees are much more valuable than me. And so let's talk a little bit about some conflict management in that kind of that CEO level or that executive level, because that can become a little bit tricky of a situation because sometimes There are some that believe that they're above the employees, and there are some that obviously believe that the employees are the reason that they're in the position they're in. So how you tackle it and how your perception is a little bit different. And when I look at some of the issues that are happening, I talked to Warren Martin from Kansas Strong the other day, and we were talking about just some of the headaches going on at the executive level. And regulations are a big one right now. There's some subsidy issues that are happening right now. There are energy expansion issues. Okay, we need to diversify. We're not just an oil and gas company anymore. We're an energy company now. So how can we keep our shareholders? Should we go into wind? Should we go into biomass? Should we go buy a Verizon and become a phone dealer? I mean, how are we going to make our numbers here? So there's a lot of different stresses when it comes to that executive level. How does somebody at that level deal with conflict management? Because on one hand, you should feel like, hey, this is my job to handle the conflict management is my daily business here. But on the other hand, boy, I tell you what, if I make the wrong move, I might be out. Like this is not like, I'm high risk, high reward type of a thing. So talk to me about the conflict management at that executive level, because right now, more than ever, boy, that executive leadership, they are making moves that are under the microscope on so and by their shareholders, let alone by regulators. Their shareholders have executives under the microscope right now. So talk to me a little bit about conflict management when it comes to executives.
Yeah, at that level, Jason, the biggest differentiator between executives who are able to successfully navigate conflict management and, sustainably and not burn themselves out or their teams out, and again, the difference between those and the ones who are not successful is that the ones who are successful, they get that extra piece of information, that extra piece of insight from their teams that, they might not otherwise get. They're adept at saying, hey, what else do I need to know? What else might I be missing? If you were in my position, what other detail is there that, you think I should know? Because by and large, Jason, the reason that unfortunately a lot of executives find themselves in conflicts is because people aren't telling them what they need to know. They're holding back. They're afraid. And in many cases, that extra piece of information, Jason, is specifically related to the leader in question, right? It's the people around them afraid to say, hey, you know what? If you could just say X, Y, or Z, that might, dispel some of these rumors. Or hey, you, Jason, as the CEO, you might not realize, but you said this a couple months ago, and now we're faced with, something that might be seen as inconsistent. What are your thoughts on addressing that proactively? That's a very tricky thing, right? To say, hey, Mr. Boss Man or Boss Woman. You're being inconsistent here, or you're going to put your foot in the mouth. And unfortunately, again, a lot of times leaders are not surrounded by people, even well-compensated people, who are willing to step out there and tell that leader what he or she needs to know. So that's the biggest thing, Jason, is again, leaders who are able to get that extra piece of information that can make a world of difference before they actually have to go and speak publicly to shareholders or other stakeholders.
What's the best way to deter a turning a molehill into a mountain? Because so often leaders can get fixated on problems, or employees can get fixated on problems, and they don't see the forest from the trees, if you will. And so they don't understand that, the solution to their problem happened 10 minutes ago, and now they're making it worse as they continue to go. I see you're nodding your head, so you understand what I'm talking about. Let's talk about how to, prevent turning a molehill into a mountain in conflict management, because that can be a huge, huge time saver for people.
Yeah, well, my wheels are turning here, Jason, but I'm going to go from molehill and tie it into a groundhog burrow,
Right on.
because again, what do you have with Punxsutawney Phil? He's a predictor, right? He's a prognosticator. He's gonna say what's gonna happen next, what's gonna happen down the road. And to answer your question, how do you prevent a molehill from turning into a mountain? Well, it's help people visualize what's likely to happen. You know, so what? Let's play this out. You know, humor me for a second. What will happen if this goes astray? You know, what's worst case scenario? And so many times, Jason, once you ask that question and people say, well, if this happens and this will happen and this will happen, guess what? They realize either A, it's not that bad, or B, there's some finite things that could be done to mitigate those problems. And now, again, it's not this giant sort of vague, you know, growing ball of stress. Again, it's a finite, oh, if then, hey, how do we change that, right? It's a series of events. So putting on your Punxsutawney Phil hat, predicting the future, running people through that, or again, you know, putting the shoe on the other foot and saying, hey, what do you think will happen? Let the other person kind of play things out. And obviously, this isn't just in the professional world, this is in the personal world as well. You know, if somebody says, oh man, I'm going to be late for that meeting. Okay, well, let's play this out. What's going to happen if you show up, you know, 10 minutes late for that meeting? Oh, well, this will happen. Well, this will happen. Okay, well, how can you mitigate some of those, the downside? Oh, I can go do X, Y, and Z. Now it's like the person's breathing, they're able to move on with life, and you don't have that mountainous, unnecessarily mountainous problem.
Joe Sinnott, the host of the Energy Detox podcast, as well as the CEO of Witting Partners. We're talking a little bit about conflict management, and he brought out the word prognostication. And of course, in my mind, it went prognostication, Phil. Wait, that's not alliteration. Groundhog's Day, futurist. Okay, so where are we at here? We're in the future. What's a future word? Wrote future Phil. There we go. I'm trying to do some alliteration here. Future Phil, let's talk about Super Bowl predictions next year, as long as we're getting in the prognostication area. So, Joe Sinnott, you are a football fan and you do follow the sport a little bit. And Super Bowl's coming up this weekend. Have you got a prediction, good sir?
I do. And that prediction stems from the firm belief that you always bet with a streak. And of course, that streak is that somehow those Chiefs keep pulling out Super Bowl victories. So that is my prediction. I believe they will win. I think it'll be close. If you're looking for a score, I'm going to go with 34-31 Chiefs over the Eagles, who of course reign from the home of Punxsutawney Phil. So that is it. I'm saying Chiefs in a close one.
So you're going with the Kansas City Chiefs over the Philadelphia Eagles. You are in Philadelphia. Are you a Steelers fan?
Oh, hold on now. We got
I'm sorry,
big
you're in
state.
Pittsburgh. You're in
We got big
Pittsburgh.
state here. So.
Yep. You're in I meant to say Pennsylvania, you know, right in the center where Happy Valley is, because nobody wants to fight in the middle of the state. But by the way, Happy Valley is one of the most beautiful places in Pennsylvania. Absolutely gorgeous. And a lot of people don't know this, but Bobby Knight, the former coach of the Indiana Hoosiers, and then he went on to Texas Tech as well. But Pennsylvania was his favorite fly fishing location because of the limestone grown in the rivers of Pennsylvania has a certain vegetation that makes those fish extra fatty, and that's what Bobby Knight liked. Is that did you ever hear that story about Bobby Knight? And
That is a new nugget for me, Jason.
well, that's one of the things about Pennsylvania. You hear all kinds of neat stories coming out of Happy Valley. But like LeVar Arrington, the former NFL player, would go back and play pickup basketball when he would play with the Redskins, which is now the Commanders. So we'll just go to my Super Bowl prediction here because I'm trailing off like an old man. Okay, so are you ready for my
So
have
you're
I
not trailing off. You're leaving us in suspense. This is a great
okay.
build. This is clearly a professional at work here, Jason.
I thought we were going to say 5 B's for a quarter next, like Grandpa Simpson when he was talking about his stories back in the old days when he used to wear an onion on the side of his belt. Okay, so have I shared my Super Bowl prediction with you?
You have not.
Okay, it's three layers. All right, three-peat, three layers. So first of all, we're going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs for a lot of the same reasons that you gave. However, because the NFL is rigged, and we want to make sure that we represent the conspiracy folks that the NFL is rigged because it's so mainstream now that ESPN talks about it, Fox talks about it. Travis Kelce said, "Why are you giving this credence?" I'll tell you why, Travis Kelce, because you're going to win three times in a row, and then you're going to invite Taylor Swift down to the 50-yard line, and Travis Kelce will propose to Taylor Swift after the Super Bowl, and then Travis Kelce will take Taylor Swift's last name. And the DEI debate will once again get sparked into a whole new stratosphere. Travis Kelce has already sold 1 million t-shirts to men. Now he's going to sell 1 million to the women. And then all the dads get to drop off the daughters at Taylor Swift, and then they get to go to party with Travis and Jason Kelce next door. That's going to be my prediction. That's my prediction, Joe.
I like it. Now, I
There
guess the
you
only the remaining question in all of that, you talked about Happy Valley. Will Saquon Barkley, will he at least have a strong performance, even though his Eagles are destined to lose thanks to the rigged NFL? Or
Not
how's he going to perform?
not to get into a sports talk here, but I did host a sports talk show for another like a decade plus, and I'll tell you, if Saquon did this, he would absolutely break the Penn State curse, right? Penn State has had a curse of Kejana Carter, NFL running backs, and Penn State has not had a very good representation of NFL players, so this would be fantastic for them. I grew up as a Washington Redskins fan, so I'm a Commanders fan. So I really find Philadelphia Eagles fans annoying, and I particularly don't care for them, and so I do not want any happiness in their life.
That is a fair statement. Again, and you're speaking to somebody who grew up a New York Giants fan,
Oh.
growing up in northern New Jersey there. So, even though I've been out here in western Pennsylvania for many years, yeah, it's tough to
Isn't that funny how that is? It's like if you're a Giants fan or a Redskins fan, you dislike the Eagles and you hate the Cowboys and you just tolerate the other ones. You know, it's like Giants, you're okay. You won a couple like we did, but you don't annoy us like the Cowboys do and like the Phil. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles fans threw batteries and snowballs at Santa Claus, and they have a jail right in the stadium. That's fantastic. That's just some, I mean, I got to give them credit for the, you know, going all in on being the worst fans in the NFL in terms of, you know, throwing snowballs at Santa Claus and et cetera, but anyway, so you are going to watch the game then, I take it?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay. I may. I just you know, I'll probably stream it or watch it or something along those lines. Might even listen on the radio, actually. I've got some work to do. Out in my shed, I've got to do some insulating in our negative 30 below weather here. Yes, I'm trying to finish my studio shed here, but out in Minnesota, next to the river out here, Joe. But how are your three rivers in Pittsburgh doing? You got three rivers still?
Still got Three Rivers. They're continuing to thaw out. So we had a fair amount of ice built up there. But yeah, we're thawing out here. We're hovering around freezing today. And
Well, we'll transition this thing right out of here now because that was one of the worst segues I've ever done in my life, Joe. But I wanted to just kind of transition into your neck of the woods, if you will, and mention to people that I know you're active with the Society of Petroleum Engineers. You have a podcast and you also run a business known as Winning Partners. So, give you an opportunity to mention any or all of those three, which is, have you got any upcoming dates or sponsorships involved out there in the Marcellus? And I know that you're back pretty regularly on the podcast now.
yeah, so far, the last couple months here, able to remain as consistent as possible. Maybe a bit of a New Year's resolution to keep getting those out there. But yeah, so I guess to weave those three items together and connect to the Three Rivers segue again, we'll make the segue work there,
That's
Jason. It's
right.
all the good thing is as soon as you start talking about rivers and flowing, I mean that's a natural, it's a natural way to talk about one thing flowing into the next, right?
Well, that's
So
the actual definition of energy, right? Is the flowing river.
there you go. So
Now,
anyway, so yeah, so the energy detox available, yeah, all your favorite podcast platforms and apps and YouTube and everything else. And as always, the goal there is to be as, timely, topical, relevant as possible. There's enough leadership stuff out there, Jason. There's millions of different coaches and tips and tricks, but the goal with the energy detox is to keep it fresh. And as always, to take universal leadership themes, communication, decision making, confidence, all those things, and connect them to the unique realities of the oil and gas industry. So, have a
So
lot of
I'm
fun.
taking a look at the clock here, and I just wanted to get in one more conspiratorial.
Oh yeah, forget. Yeah, go for it. No need for a
Yeah.
segue when you got conspiracy theories on the mind.
Well, when we were talking about the flow of energy and water, and I thought, well, as long as we're representing some conspiracies, I might as well represent this conspiracy because it's such a fabulous thought exercise to understand, is this real or did somebody make this up? But either way, it's so fun because, so currency, right? Currency. What I was told by several smart people that went to East Coast schools is that when you look back at the origin of the word and the origin of all these different things, current, currency, right? So the current of energy, it comes from water. It comes from the flow of the river. So when you take a look at when people started understanding energy, when we went from, cavemen to now, they learned from the river, and that's why the word current is currency, right? Now, when we fold in money, now it's a little bit different because what they talk about is that money is actually stored energy. So money actually represents energy within people. So if I give you $1,000, you are going to go give me $1,000 worth of energy, and it differs on every different person, right? So when we look at it that way, it's very interesting because what controls the currency in a river are river banks. So banks then became what controls human energy, is to otherwise we're just overland flooding of humans. We have no direction, we have no currency, we're just overland flooding of humans. So we needed to get banks to control the energy and the flow of energy. And the first time I heard that, it chilled me to the bone. It just chilled me to the bone. Because for a lot of different reasons, but the more and more I processed it, the more and more I thought about it, because I'm an editor, so I understand etymology, I went, wow, God, that just sounds so real. I'm going to believe it moving forward. And so it apparently dates back to the Egyptians and a number of different things. But Joe, what say you on the whole conspiracy that, that's where it all comes from? Energy is money, and money is energy, and it does need to be controlled at the end of the day.
You've got my wheels turning, Jason. I'll tell you what, that sounds like a perfect idea for a episode of the Energy Detox with the added tie-in. Again, we like to be timely into the think of all the money that's flowing in and out of sports books and casinos heading into the Super Bowl. So who knows, Jason? You may have just inspired
Take a step
and
back and look at the Green New Deal that's going on in Europe. Take a look
yeah.
at the Inflation Reduction Act. Since I've said this for a long or for several years now, if you take a look at the money that was printed since COVID, it's about what America had for the first 250 years. So you could argue that in the last 4 or 5 years, they have produced enough money to mimic a large country, and they release that energy out into the marketplace. And so, I mean, that's kind of interesting when you look at it from an abstract, simplistic view like that.
There's a lot. This is again. We probably should wrap up soon because you want to talk. Now we've got seg. Now we'll have Segway Palooza, right? We'll go from here. We'll talk about Trump's efforts in California to release the flow of water, and we can talk about hydroelectric energy and really kind of hammer home this thing. And
And we don't
I'll
even
tell you
want to
what. No
get
matter
into
what, I'm not going
cryptocurrency.
to make the mistake of actually trying to verify everything you just told me. I'd rather just stick with hey. Jason Spies once told me about the origins of the word currency and everything else. So, just so you know, this is one of those no reason to Google, no need to go to Snopes or any of those things. I think I'm just gonna roll with this and
See,
start
and
telling my kids, right? This is when I
that's
get home from
exactly
school
what
today,
I
I'll
did,
teach them something.
Joe. That's exactly what I did. When I heard it, I went, I don't even care if it's true or not. The story sounds good and I like it. So I'm just going to stand next to this rabbit hole and go nuts with this shallow interpretation of it. But you are right, though, that if anybody was to jump into that rabbit hole, it would turn into probably about a 17 series, 3 hour podcast per season or per episode deal because It not only is it interesting, but it's fun. It's really fun.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, I mean, already in this conversation, Jason, you just mentioned rabbit holes. We've talked about molehills and we've talked about groundhog burrows. So even right there, we got a lot of layers to this thing, which I don't know if anybody's still listening to our conversation, but this has been incredibly enjoyable as always, Jason. So thank you for the opportunity to chat.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's why he's the best in the business. That's why he brought it all the way back to the very beginning, Groundhog's Day. Joe Sinnott is his name. He is the host of the Energy Detox Podcast, Winning Partners. He is the executive producer. Thanks so much, Joe.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jason.